Doctrine, he set forth the wheel of doctrine of the Four Noble Truths. The usual progression of the Four Noble Truths, of true sufferings and their origins and true cessations and the paths for achieving those cessations is not in terms of the order of their production, with the causes first and the effects second. However, Buddha set it forth with the effects first and the causes second, because this is in terms of the mode of practice. First of all, one needs to recognize what is suffering, recognize, identify suffering. For instance, there are some people who suffer from depression who don't realize it and thus don't take any medicine in order to take care of it, just feeling, I don't need any medicine, what would I need medicine for? Thus, it is first necessary to understand that oneself is sick. It's necessary to recognize the type of sickness that one has. In Chandrakirti's commentary on Aryadeva's 400 stanzas, he tells the story of a kingdom where everyone except the king had become crazy, and the king was the only one who wasn't crazy. But the king felt a little lonely, therefore the king in time ate this thing that made everybody else crazy and joined them in their craziness. Thus, it is extremely important first for oneself to identify one's own faulty state. And when one identifies this state of faultiness or of sickness, then one develops a dissatisfaction with it. Then one has to investigate whether this sickness, whether this state of faultiness is has causes or not. And if it is caused, is there any antidote for overcoming it or not? And whether it's possible for oneself to enact that antidote or not. Thus, the second noble truth is that of the truth of the origins of suffering. The suffering is not just produced by one vague cause, rather it's produced individually by one's own contaminated karma, actions. And those actions, contaminated actions, are produced by afflictive emotions which come from an untamed mind. Thus, the final derivation or the basic derivation of suffering is one's own untamed mind, one's mind. Then it's to be investigated whether these faults of the mind can be removed or not. Dharmakirti said, the mind has a nature of clear light, the defilements are temporary. And in Sutra it is said that mind is not the final mode of subsistence of mind. Mind is not the final nature of mind. The nature of mind is clear light. There are two basic modes of commenting on the meaning of the statement that the nature of the mind is clear light. The first is that the mind is empty of inherent existence, and that emptiness of inherent existence is called clear light. But then there is a second mode of interpretation in which clear light refers to the luminous and cognitive or knowing factor of the mind that beginninglessly exists with the mind. As it is said in Maitreya's Uttara Tantra, the sublime continuum of the great vehicle, which is in commentary on the sutras on the Buddha nature or Tathagata Garbha, the defilements are temporary, and the good qualities of the powers and so forth of Buddhahood, that the basic nature of them exists in the mind in the form of this clear and cognitive nature of the mind. Thus, it is by way of this that it is established that there are true cessations of suffering and the causes of suffering.
One quotation now, not coming easily. I think. Kasa. Oh. Kowatani nyangendes. Kowatani nyangende. Nibudini yemains.
As Nagarjuna says, the two. Oh no.
Kowatani nyangende. Nibuddi. Nibudini yemains. Takasa jayanguyarba. Rashimabriskorba.
The two, cyclic existence and nirvana, do not inherently exist.
And
then he goes on to say the knowledge of the nature of cyclic existence is itself, well, knowledge of the nature of cyclic existence is itself nirvana. Now, with regard to nirvana, with regard to nirvana, it's necessary to recognize that there are some 10 odd different types of nirvana. One being the natural nirvana, one being the nirvana with remainder, another being the nirvana without remainder, and another being the non-abiding nirvana. Now, the basis of this is as follows. When we speak of the extinction of defilements, what one is saying is that defilements are extinguished in the sphere of reality. Now the basis of all of our trouble, the basis of the afflictive emotions, is a consciousness that misconceives the nature of objects. Since these afflictive emotions are based on such ignorance, misconceiving the nature of objects, that ignorance and those afflictive emotions can be removed through the wisdom that realizes the actual nature of objects. Now, that into which the afflictive emotions, ignorance, and so forth are extinguished is the sphere of reality. And that which causes this removal is a wisdom consciousness that understands the reality, the absence of inherent existence of phenomena. So thus, this is the meaning of defilements being extinguished in the sphere of reality. As Nagarjuna says, through the extinguishing of contaminated actions and afflictive emotions, there is liberation. Contaminated actions and afflictions arise from false conceptuality. And false conceptuality arises from the elaborations of inherent existence. And those elaborations of the conception of inherent existence are ceased through emptiness. And the Sanskrit can also be interpreted as meaning that the elaborations of the conception of inherent existence are ceased in emptiness. What is that into which the defilements are extinguished? It is the sphere of reality, emptiness. What is that by which the defilements are extinguished or ceased? It again is emptiness. Thus, this involves the third noble truth, that of true cessations. Thus, in this way, you can perceive that defilements are extinguishable, are removable. Once one sees that defilements can be removed, that true cessations can be actualized, then one needs the fourth noble truth, that of true paths. The main meaning of true paths are the exalted wisdom consciousnesses of superiors perceiving emptiness, reality, these being what induce true cessations.
다든지기 다 간다 빵자 가야 로마 찍 아니 빵배 차와대다 아 차와대다 딩어서 장용하기 아니 아 가서 우리 822부터 다 최근 좀 엄마한테 차대요.
Now, a state of cessation of any level of the defilements and the a true path that induces such a state of separation from defilements, these two are the main doctrine jewel. So, thus, they are the main refuge, the actual refuge. And those that have these doctrines, these doctrines in their continuums, are called superiors, Aryan, and are the spiritual community. The spiritual community being those who assist others to refuge. And through cultivate, when one cultivates such a path and thereby finally removes all defilements, all faults, and attains all good attributes, one then is a Buddha. That's what a Buddha is. Now that which acts as the actual antidote to the afflictive obstructions and as well as the obstructions to omniscience is the view realizing emptiness. Through the assistance of powerful merit, the wisdom consciousness realizing emptiness can act as an antidote to the obstructions to omniscience. But when one doesn't have such powerful assistance, it can act just as an antidote to the afflictive obstructions, the obstructions to liberation from cyclic existence. Thus, it is by way of such differences that there come to be a great vehicle and a small vehicle. The great vehicle being when one has the compassionate extra force of merit of the great compassionate method. Therefore, from among the three principal aspects of the path, if one is engaged in the practice of the lesser vehicle and is seeking enlightenment, liberation primarily for oneself, and then one generates the first principal aspect of the path, the thought definitely to get out of cyclic existence, as well as the third one, the correct view, and on the basis of this attains liberation. However, for a practitioner of the great vehicle, one also practices the love, compassion, and altruistic intention to become enlightened, that is the second of the third principal aspects of the path, and through practicing all three principal aspects of the path, proceeds on to the omniscience of Buddhahood. Thus, those are the three, what do you say, that's the complete cycle of the three principal aspects of the path. Now, in order to enhance further the wisdom consciousness realizing emptiness, there is the practice of mantra, of tantra. The main distinguishing feature of Tantra comes in the achievement, in the speedy achievement of a more powerful version of the meditative stabilization, which is a union of the calm abiding of the mind and special insight into emptiness. That's the basic general mode of procedure of the Buddhist text. Now the text about which I'll be speaking today is composed by Tsongkhapa. The person who requested this teaching from Tsongkhapa was a person living in eastern Tibet in Gerong, who was one of Tsongkhapa's main disciples. He asked Tsongkhapa for it, and Tsongkhapa bestowed this teaching. Even though this text is in one way a condensation of Tsongkhapa's teaching on the stages of the path in his great exposition of the stages of the path and so forth, it does seem to have its own special mode of instruction. Tsongkhapa's two expositions of the stages of the path, the great exposition and the middling or small exposition, take as their basis Atisha's lamp for the path to enlightenment. In those texts, the stages of practice are divided into those of beings of three different levels of capacity. And meditation is set forth relative to those three different levels. This is the basis of those texts. Thus, these are called the stages of the path of beings of three capacities. However, when you look at the three principal aspects of the path to supreme enlightenment, this text, it seems that the mode of procedure could be called the stages of a path of a being of great capacity. However, I can't decisively say that. I received this teaching from Yongzin Ling Rinpoche. Now the first line of the text is homage to the foremost holy lamas. I'll maybe tell them it's in the book. This is found on page 5 of the booklet. Perhaps you've already identified it. Tsongkhapa is paying in this first line respectful homage to the lamas from whom he has heard the paths of the beings of three different capacities.
Indicate
The significance being indicated by this homage, the significance indicated to Tsongkhapa's followers or to the readers of the text, is that for one to generate the three principal aspects of the path in one's continuum, one needs to rely on a qualified teacher, a qualified lama. So then, what constitutes a qualified lama? It's extremely important to understand what the qualifications of a lama are and to investigate teachers in order to understand whether they fulfill those qualifications or not. As Buddha himself said, O monks and scholars, you should not accept my word just out of respect for me, but rather upon analyzing and investigating it in the way that a goldsmith analyzes gold through scorching, cutting, and rubbing it. In this way, Buddha himself spoke about the need to analyze even what he himself said. He also set forth the four reliances, which are, rely not on the person, but on the doctrine. Then with respect to the doctrine, rely not on the word, but on the meaning. Then with respect to the meaning, rely not on the interpretable meaning, but on the definitive meaning. And then with respect to the definitive meaning, rely not on ordinary consciousness, but on an exalted wisdom consciousness. Thus, since it is the case that one first needs to identify what the characteristics, qualifications of a lama are, and investigate teachers that way, it is helpful to know the qualifications of lamas that are set forth in the Vinaya, that is to say, the discipline scriptures, in the sets of discourses, another set of qualifications that is set forth in the sets of discourses, and a set of qualifications that is set forth in the text on mantra, tantra. Now, in terms of the qualifications that are mentioned in the sets of discourses, as Maitreya says in his ornament for the Sutras of the Great Vehicle, there are 10 qualifications. The first is to be tame, disciplined. This indicates that the person is endowed with ethics. Whether it's the ethics of one who has left the householder life as a monk or nun, or the ethics of a lay person, in any case, to be endowed to possess good ethics. As Tsongkhapa says in his great exposition of the stages of the path, since there is no chance if you haven't tamed yourself to tame someone else, thus the beginning of taming others is to tame yourself.
Mm-hmm. yandan na rinyu yabay mi pens. Gyawet tenpa jida timbe gyu dulushi gwasos.
And the taming of your mental continuum is not just to have some partial type of practice or understanding, but rather but it's necessary rather to have a mode of disciplining or taming the continuum that accords with the general structure of the whole of the Conqueror Buddha's teaching. So then what is that mode of taming the continuum that accords with the whole structure of Buddha's teaching? That is to possess the three higher trainings. Thus this first of the ten qualifications to be tamed or disciplined indicates the first of the three trainings, the training in higher ethics. Then the second qualification is to be peaceful. This indicates that one has the qualities of meditative stabilization in which the distractions of laxity and excitement and so forth have become pacified. And then the third qualification is that of being very peaceful. What this means is that through perceiving the actual mode of subsistence of phenomena, one has pacified the elaborations of the conception of inherent existence. In terms of a type of wisdom that is common to the Buddhist systems, there is the wisdom which is the knowledge of the selflessness of persons, this being the knowledge that persons are empty of being self-sufficient or substantially existent. This is the coarse personal selflessness. Included here in this third qualification is not the understanding of the deeper level of the selflessness of phenomena. And then the fourth qualification is that the Lama have more good qualities or more education than the student. And the fifth qualification is to have effort. If one didn't have effort, even if one did have more education and qualities, but was just lazy, it wouldn't be suitable. Thus, it has to be somebody who's working hard to bring about the welfare of others. And then the sixth qualification is to be rich with hearing, to have heard a great deal of teaching, to have read a great many texts, so that one would be able to teach many different things. It's not sufficient just to have the fourth qualification of having more good qualities. Rather, one should have an acquaintance with the general procedure of the text.
And
then thorough realization of suchness, this refers to realization of the selflessness of phenomena. The eighth qualification is to be skilled in speaking, that even if one knew these profound topics, if you had confused speech and mixed up everything as you spoke, then this would not be suitable. Thus one has to be skilled in speech. The ninth is for the person to have a nature of kindness, of altruism, of one-pointedly seeking to help others. If one doesn't have that, then one cannot help much. If one doesn't have an altruistic attitude, the mere explanation of something, it's very difficult to help someone merely through an explanation. And the tenth is the quality of having a great deal of patience, a willingness to explain a topic to students over and over and over again. And to explain it in a way that doesn't make the students bored. These are set out as the 10 qualifications of a spiritual guide. Thus, it's necessary to investigate whether a teacher possesses these qualities or not. Nowadays, I think it is important when people listen to the doctrine not to immediately take the person who's explaining doctrine as a lama, but rather to take the person as a Dharma friend, a religious friend who is speaking doctrine, and within that attitude, listen to the person, not immediately taking on the person as one's lama. And as you listen to the doctrine, as you listen over time, you can spy and see if and investigate. And then if over time you find that the Lama really is someone suitable to be relied upon in that way and is fully qualified, then you can take that person as a Lama. It's suitable. In a tantric text, it is said that it is worthwhile for both the student and teacher to spend even 12 years analyzing each other. Thus, you shouldn't hurry, you should take great caution. But then it's a different matter with regard to taking initiation. In order to receive the magnificent blessings of initiation, it's necessary to be to have faith in that person as a lama.
Mm.
Now, usually I don't give many initiations. In the first place, it's difficult for me to be fully qualified. In the second, it's very dangerous. However, today I am boldly preparing to confer initiation. So you didn't have time to analyze. So here I'm saying that you should analyze for 12 years, but then I'm giving you only perhaps one or two days.
When
you find someone who possesses the qualifications and take that person as the Lama, then it's important to train in having faith and respect for that person, the main form of this being to accomplish the doctrine that the Lama teaches.
The main
function and reason for developing faith and respect in a Lama is to come closer to that person, to come closer to the state of that person. Much as when one takes great interest and likes a great deal a certain movie star or a singer, one gradually takes on the qualities of that movie star or singer. Now, what's needed here is that the good qualities of the Lama move to oneself. Now, it's said that one should please one's Lama, the main way of pleasing a Lama is for one to achieve the doctrine that the Lama teaches. Indeed, also there are the practices of making offering of material things or showing respect and so forth, but these are minor. These are factors toward generating the third one, which is to achieve the doctrine that the Lama teaches.